The first time I encountered Samuel Beckett's Crap's Last Tape, I was supremely uninterested. The occasion was an initial read-through in a small, bare-bones Pittsburgh theater that was producing an evening of short Beckett plays, one of which I had been cast in. I was 23 years old at the time and had an outsized sense of my acting ability as well as what the future held in store for me. Meanwhile, I was enduring a dreary existence, chronically single, jobless, antisocial, with the exception of theater, and living alone on the outskirts of the city. I was convinced that things were about to change for me at any moment, and that all I had to do was wait and be patient. There was a nagging awareness, however, that if there was any hope of altering my life, artistically and emotionally, I had to move to New York City. I had been contemplating this for several years, but I was paralyzed by the prospect of leaving a city in which I had lived almost all of my life and that had become so familiar and comforting. Instead, I decided to continue to wait and be patient. So, on a cold night in January of 1992, I sat with five other actors and read aloud from the plays that would comprise our evening of Beckett. I had been cast in Rough for Theater One, in which I played an energetic and conniving invalid who gets to roll around in a wheelchair, duping a blind man. I liked my play. In fact, I liked all of the plays, except for Crap's Last Tape, which struck me as convoluted and pointless. It was a 45-minute story about nothing but an old man named Crap who listens to a tape recording he made of himself 30 years earlier. 4 weeks of rehearsals passed. I was still single and still waiting. The night before we opened, we were afforded an opportunity to sit in the audience and watch the other plays, the last of which was Crap's Last Tape. It began with the 39-year-old actor, impressively made up to look ancient, staring out at the audience from behind a desk that held a tape recorder. Above him, a lone light bulb dangled. This was succeeded by 10 wordless minutes of banana eating that was absolutely hilarious. I laughed aloud in the empty theater. And after that, the story proper began, with the elderly Crap listening to the tape recording he had made on his birthday 30 years earlier. Suddenly, it was no longer funny. The juxtaposition of the recording and the solitary old man in his dark apartment was sobering and unsettling. It was evident that the owner of the young voice on the tape had a rather grand view of himself and his possibilities, while we, the audience, were given to understand that what had ultimately resulted 30 years later were missed opportunities, lost love, and abject isolation. Beckett's message was simple. Time will pass. Sitting in the audience, I thought about how I was only 23 years old, but that one day, much sooner than I expected, I would be 33 years old, and then I would be 43, and so on, and that it was quite possible that I would end up in my old age exactly the person I was now, living alone in Pittsburgh, dreaming of change, and wondering what would have happened if I had moved to New York City. Perhaps my best years are gone, when there was a chance at happiness, the young recorded Crap says at the close of the play, his vain, pompous tone barely diminished. But I wouldn't want them back. Not with the fire in me now. No, I wouldn't want them back. And with the tape machine running on in silence, the old Crap stares out at the audience, a look of defeat and horror, as I stared back. Perhaps this play would not have affected me so much if not for the fact that for the next 3 weeks, three nights each week, I was forced to sit in the dressing room in my theatrically distressed suit and listen to it again and again until every one of Beckett's heartbreaking words had been committed to memory. And each night, when the monologue was nearing its end, I would stand in the wings for the curtain call, and I would watch that closing moment, now seared forever into my brain, with Crap staring out at the audience and the disembodied voice intoning, "Perhaps my best years are gone," when there was a chance of happiness. The following year, I was living in New York City.